High tide is in about 45 minutes, I think.
Wow.
Today, a really high tide, 7.2. So you might see if you can see any evidence of that here. Going back to our discussion yesterday of sea level rise. There was sloshing up by the rocket ship.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Actually, your highest tide is near here, right?
Are we going to
go
by
the
rocket?
Yeah.
Woohoo!
Not with the mic.
Welcome on the Devil's Slide field trip, and then we'll be seeing other sites of Pacifica today. I'm Tammy Grove. I'm the Commission Statewide Development Transportation Program Manager, and I have put together, with some help from other staff that are here today, a brief history on Devil's Slide. Because of our tight time frames, we thought we would try to do a little bit of background talk while we're driving there. We'll have to have a safety speech. Then we'll be going both past the tunnels. You'll be able to have a chance to see the southern portals, and then we'll go back to the northern side of the tunnels. After that, we'll be driving to Lindemar State Beach, where we'll have lunch waiting for us. Talk about some of the erosion issues there, and then also after that we'll be going down to Lindemar, to Land's End on the Esplanade to look at some projects that are coming up. So we put together this briefing booklet. I know if you can't read while you're driving, it's probably not good for driving, but it'll be a resource for you. We basically wanted to point out sort of the long history of Devil's Slide. It is, as you can see, early 1930s when it was built, when they finally gave up trying to build a railroad connection around Devil's Slide. And that was when we first had Highway 1 that would connect Pacifica to the southern parts of San Mateo County. Over the years, because it's such a highly unstable landslide area, a series of landslides have closed the Highway 1 connection several times over. And it's always been a big question, how do we keep it open? A very important coastal access route connects the whole southern part of San Mateo coastline into the San Francisco. And as you can see, there's been a variety of different proposals. In the 1960s, Caltrans, as it was looking at other parts of the state, was considering a freeway connection that would go through from Pacifica over San Pedro Mountain and connect back into the freeway that we'll be driving on later today. At that time, they purchased a very large bypass, and that set in motion a number of different skirmishes over whether or not something that massive should be built in that area. It went through in the 1970s, when there was a lot of environmental legislation passed, but a number of lawsuits ensued about the possibility of constructing a freeway there. And the proposal went dormant for a while. During that time, State Parks had the opportunity to purchase lands on San Pedro Mountain to open up a section of, it's known as the McNee Ranch, as part of Montura State Beach. And so they purchased on either side of these bypass lands a large area that became State Park. Then, here. 1980s, there were more landslides, more concerns. Caltrans came in to look for some different possibilities of building that freeway at that time. The commission was split on those approvals and it was not approved. And after that time, there was another bypass alignment. The Martini Bypass Alignment, which is the figure that's in this display here with the red line. That actually should be marked 1986. And it's known as the Martini Creek Bypass. At that time, the commission did approve that proposal, which was in 1986. But there was a lot of litigation then following again. So obviously it's been a highly contentious area for a long time. Subsequently, 1995, a very big storm year. And you can see from the photos, it completely closed the highway for a long period of time. And it renewed a whole new interest in what was the solution there. Coastal Commission was involved with a whole lot of the discussion of what should happen in this area. And worked with San Mateo County in looking at different feasibility options. During that time, a very strong public initiative and sentiment began to develop in the San Mateo area. And a number of people really began looking at why couldn't we do a tunnel alternative that would allow us to avoid the landslide, keep the highway open, and not bisect the McNee Ranch parklands. With that momentum and a very active citizen involvement, Citizen Initiative in San Mateo County was launched. It was known as Major T, and it was to support the tunnel as the only alternative for Highway 1 in that area. And it was passed with 74% vote, very strong support for that solution. We, concurrently with that, have been working with the county, and an LCP amendment had been prepared. Within just a few months, the LCP was amended to provide for this tunnel alternative. So that launched, that set the background for the project that you're going to see today. Of course, after that time, we had to go through a number of coastal commission processes, including our federal consistency review, since there's federal funding in this project. We processed that in the year 2000. That set a framework of a lot of what the Coastal Act policy expectations were from the commission as we move forward with the development of the new tunnel, including separating out the bypass, taking the lands that once Highway 1 was no longer needed and they were relinquished, they would become part of the coastal trail. That there would be extensive mitigation for environmentally sensitive habitat that would be affected, particularly red-legged frogs and wetlands, and a number of protecting the rural scenic character of the area, provisions that we expected in that area. After that, Caltrans began developing the plans for, and they came forward to San Mateo County for the coastal development permit. And during that period of time, our staff worked very closely with the county on the permits so that we would make sure there were very strong provisions that would clearly carry out these LCP policies. And once that was approved, it was appealed to the Coastal Commission, but because of the CDP that had been passed to the local level, we did not find a substantial issue, and it stood with the county. One thing that's notable as part of the conditions of the CDP is it really foresaw including Coastal Commission staff involvement with the county in carrying out a number of the permit conditions. So we have been involved extensively with Caltrans for the last 8 years. One of those provisions was the Devil's Lake Task Force. We've been working very hard on how we'll open up the coastal trail. The other is we've been working with their staff in the review of the mitigation monitoring and looking at the performance success of a number of those provisions. One other thing that I think is worth pointing out is during the processing of that CDP, one of the things that we were concerned about were the bypass lands that were owned by Caltrans but were no longer going to be needed for the freeway. And one of the features that we were looking for was to ensure that at least the lands of the bypass that were bisecting the state park would be transferred over to state parks, which there was legislation that was passed concurrent with the CDP to ensure that. And then this diagram shows that area. And then the southern part of the bypass is goes through the township of Wantara. And we continue to be concerned about what will happen with those lands. Through the San Mateo County LCP update that you recently approved, we worked with Caltrans and the county to put provisions in there to ensure that a linear town park and trail plan will be put together. And one of the reasons we were particularly concerned about that is within that area, there are nearly 400 substandard lots that were part of the Bag Bypass, and we wanted to ensure that when that was relinquished, that they wouldn't be put on the open market for development, and that public needs for trails and protection of resources would first be planned out before any of the other lots would be relinquished. So the next parts of the handout talk about the project specifically. I think we'll cover those more once we get to the site. And we want to make sure we have time to do what Caltrans is going to give a brief overview of some of what we'll be seeing, and then we have to have time to do a safety instruction so that we'll be able to go on onto the tunnel construction site. We'll be able to answer questions once we get out of the class.
That's where the bypass was going to go through, and the mountain would have been cut down 225 feet.
So here we're going to come up, and here you get the first view of the bridge approach to the northern portals. We'll be coming back here and driving in so you have a chance to see it. Right here is where there's going to be a new parking lot with a cul-de-sac. That's going to become an entrance to the new coastal trail, which I didn't
explain. So right now you're walking into the northbound tunnel?
So this project has a little bit of everything. We had the ranch below had a horse access, trail access that went actually right across here and connected up to the trail over there. So as part of the project, we rebuilt this horse trail all the way down on the other side so that they can come from the valley floor and continue that connection. As part of our permit, we were trying to connect all trails that existed. So of course we've connected all trails and we've made new ones. You know, as part of the main road now, it's going to be part of the coastal trail. So all those details. And I don't know if you want to go over and look at the ponds.
So again, the bridge, one of the main features on the bridge is the reason why we built that is to avoid the impact that we were going to have on wetlands and habitat for red-legged frogs. So maybe we'll get on the other side and we'll show you the North Pond and show you where the population of the red-legged frog is. But this is also dispersal habitat for the red-legged frog. So they're found around Last week we found, how many did we find? One or two?
Two.
Two red-legged frogs in the tunnel.
No.
So they like the tunnel too.
They move when it starts raining, they start moving. You know, they beat you, you know? They knew the Coastal Commission was coming and they wanted to be there before.
So did you shut down the project when they were there?
No, we do have monitors, biological monitors. They're permitted by the Fish and Wildlife Service, so no one is available, is not able to handle those frogs except the biological monitors.
They relocated them right away.
They were right there.
So this is a view over the ranch. So they still have an active operation, you know, for horses and kennels. And so they still have their operation, and they've been working with us really closely. Right here, you see this is the North Pond. So again, it's an active breeding pond for the red-legged frog. I believe it's about 4,000 to 5,000 square feet of the pond. And one of the main concerns was whether or not there was going to be an impact from our construction onto the pond. So we do have ESAs around it, and also BMP, best management practices for water quality to prevent any discharges onto the pond. We also have an active monitoring plan and program to ensure that the red-legged frog is protected. And then beyond the canyon, you can't really see it here, but do you guys want to come down here? Yeah, there's a couple more ponds. They're hard to see, but gives you a better sense. Okay, so you see the fence? That is the exclusion fence, the plywood fence. So it prevents the frogs from moving around. And we have another pond, which is right on your right-hand side, behind the canyon here, the ridge. So it's hard to see it, but that's the new pond that was built as a precautionary measure, as a mitigation in advance of the project. So should there be any impacts on the population of the North Pond, then we would have a second population that was active, and it wouldn't jeopardize you know, the well-being of the red-legged frog. So, but we haven't had any events. We haven't had any impacts where we have had a take on the North Pond. But still, we have that that insurance, if you will, on that side. So we got three ponds. We are going to be putting we do have conservation easements around those ponds. We're trying to identify a party who will be receiving an endowment to manage those ponds in perpetuity for the protection of the red-legged frog. So, you know, that has been really, really important. Again, we're also, in terms of wetland impacts, we built a mitigation site on the south side of the project, about 1 mile south from the south portal at the chart house. That was not intended to be for red-legged frog, because the impacts were for wetlands, not for red-legged frog. But it so happens that the red-legged frog is there now, so it was sort of ended up being a dual purpose. We minimized the impacts on wetlands to less than an acre, working with the commission and Army Corps and Fish and Game, and Fish and Wildlife Service. And in contrast with Martini Creek, it was going to be 28 acres of wetland impact. So it's pretty small. There were unavoidable impacts. The commission there was balancing provisions under the San Mateo LCP about the impacts to wetlands and the need for the project and public access. So that was approved partially based on that. And we have the chart house, which is successful. We just did the final walkthrough about 3 weeks ago with the agencies. It was given a clean bill of health, and it will be going to GGNRA for management in perpetuity.
So just to point out something else, this wall, this little rock wall down here, that's access for the public access into Pacifica. Both sides of that has bus pads.
for San Mateo County Transportation, the bus transportation. They can stop there, or anybody else can stop there and use that. And because we have limited access at these cul-de-sacs. But there's an example where we really didn't have a plan for anybody. No one had a vision yet when we worked with Pacifica, City of Pacifica, to develop that, and also worked with Parks and the Coastal Conservancy on the other end to develop some routes that we got through. Right? Yep. We're very proud of our partnership.
Yeah, we put in that handout. We tried to give you a whole schematic that shows how the Coastal Trail connects to the project.
And then one just want to point out the original bypass from the 80s. It was going to come up along here and curve around the top of the head of this canyon. And along here was about 8 million cubic yards of grading, cut through this notch here, and then back up and over the mountain to the other side.
Take off
a lot of hills.
Not at
kind.
This would have been the toll disposal site.
Yeah. And that's cool.
Yeah. Great accomplishment.
Great job.
Well, that access road that you see over there, I'm sorry, that access road, that's going to be also pulled out. It's going to be revegetated, restored upon completion of the project. So, you know, that is also going to be re-vegged. Some of the areas, the north portal also has been already hydroseeded. The vegetation is coming back up. So it will eventually mature to that coastal scrub that you see in the background.
Good job.
So thank you. I want to really offer thanks to the Caltrans staff to make this possible. Up ahead of us is Pedro Point. And we have with us right now, we have Mike Bassey, who's works for the Pacifica Land Trust, and he's going to give us just a really quick background on what's happening there and the trail opportunities that are open.
Okay, thank you very much. So everything you see on the other side of the highway here is Pedro Point Headland, which is a public open space, was acquired in part through a grant from Caltrans. Coastal Conservancy owns part of the land. Whoa, and the City of Pacifica owns another part. I'm going to grab this part. Can you guys hear me okay?
Yeah.
So this trail access right here will join up through the Pedro Point Headland as part of the coastal trail.
Push the button.
And right now we're getting...
Push the button.
Can you hear me now?
Yay!
As we go... So right now there's already a lot of trail on the headland, looking out over Pedro Point Rock, which you'll see when you're down by the beach having lunch. And in any case, so we've had lots of great, this is really, when you come out that north portal, this will be the recreational area for now, until such time as we are able to get an easement over Shamrock Ranch on the other side of the highway. This really is it. So it's an extremely important part of the connection. It sometimes gets overlooked, but it's a fabulous place. I invite you to check out the PedroPointHeadland.org, which is a website. We have had a stewardship program up there for the last 3 years. Done a lot of work with basically dealing with slides, revegetation with natives, and trying to enhance visitor experience up there, basically, is the bottom line. So this is all Pedro Point Headland that we're going by right now. And anyway, it's great. I really appreciate the work you guys have done. I thank you. And does anybody have any questions about the headland?
How about the land trust? What's your land trust?
That's the Pacifica Land Trust. It's a small nonprofit land trust, but we've been in existence since 1992, and we acquired the headland property. This piece of property over here at the mouth of the creek we acquired so that we could have a lagoon restoration. So, in answer to your question, we've been involved for a long time now.
Whitehall that you may have heard about yesterday, an area of deferred certification. These are places where the commission and local governments couldn't reach agreement on how to deal with it in the LCP, so they basically carve out a hole and it's uncertified, and we continue to have permit jurisdiction there.
95%.
Yeah. Esther just mentioned the 95.5%. That got a little confused, I think, as the day went on, but it's actually about 84% of the geographic area of the coast is certified. but it's something more like 72% of the jurisdictions are certified. And that's because most of the uncertified jurisdictions are cities and have less of the geographic area. And nearly all the counties are certified except for LA County. So,
what's the whole four of this? I'll explain that one here.
So, as we head up Highway 1 here, again, here's the lot on the left that you just did the permit for, where there's going to be paid parking in the future. And we did reserve some short-term parking there for the surfing community because it does tend to be a popular stop and shop kind of place. And here's the dune field I was talking about, where plover management, plover concerns are a real issue, and that fee base will then be plowed back into that management.
The nesting or wintering?
The coastal zone here is the Highway 1 that we're on. So over there is out of the coastal zone, and over here is in. And you can see the coastal trail that Tim Duff was speaking of on the left here, heading up the hillside next, just inland of, or seaward of the highway there below. And it connects all the way up and over. Where there was significant erosion, I think it was 97, 98, El Nino, and ultimately I think 7 homes were removed. Some of them had actually started to fall in, they were red tagged. Right in front of you, right here, is where there were residential homes. It's now a coastal access project that was done with the Conservancy, and you can't see it, but there's actually a revetment at the bottom here, because at the time of the emergency, rock was put in, ultimately was permitted by the commission actually to protect the trail and the street, and the utilities were also vulnerable. And so this is what we have right now, but that's under a permit authorization to come back in 2014 for the commission's review, because there were some things that hadn't been adequately reviewed in the commission's opinion. And so you'll be seeing that in a couple years to figure out whether you want to keep the revetment. These are the last two houses that didn't fall in at that time. The next parcel here on your left is owned by the Conservancy, and we anticipate at some point some kind of access project coming forward to further enhance the coastal trail along this section. But see that it's all sand. We'll get out up here for a minute. I think we can squeeze that in. But the apartment building immediately coming up on your left is the AIMCO project. About a year or so ago, you authorized the retention of a revetment that had been put in illegally a while ago, and required mitigation for that revetment. And that's a tricky place. We might be able to see it as we move along. But so that's the AIMCO apartments. And then immediately next to these apartments are the Esplanade apartments, just past this bus, just past this, these buildings here. I believe it's 340, 330, 320, 310. Esplanade, 350 also. And this is a disaster in process. A few years back, there was a lot of press about the tremendous falling of the cliff. These buildings are habitable, and there is some revetment at the base, unpermitted currently, emergency revetment. The building that's red tagged is the one right here immediately in front of us, the second building from the north, I believe. You'll see, yeah, you see the notices there. So it's very precarious. That building right there, the corner is hanging over the edge slightly. So we'll get out for 10 minutes or so here and talk about Land's End, which is a pending permit that we haven't heard yet. Just describing the facts, though.
Apartments. It's a 260-unit apartment complex that was constructed in the early 70s, permitted in 72 prior to Coastal Act permitting requirements. You can see there it's constructed constructed on top louder, of 80 to 100 foot bluffs, obviously precariously perched. Back in 2010, there were a series of catastrophic bluff failures. Land's End ended up with, they lost about 90 feet of width along the length of their property. Correct. And so after their failures, they came in and requested an emergency authorization to put in a revetment. The revetment was to go along the entire width of the property, so 670 feet. It was a large trench about 35 feet wide and 5 feet deep that they dug and installed the revetment in. After beginning construction of the emergency revetment, they reconsidered their project, their proposal, and they came back and requested authorization for a vertical wall. They ultimately received their temporary authorization under an emergency permit to construct the vertical wall, which you can barely see, actually. It starts at the base of the bluff and goes about 20 feet high. It's sculpted and colored to match the natural surroundings.
Yes, that's good.
And then it also includes an upper bluff retaining wall system, which is located underneath the trail that you see. Actually, when that 90 feet fell, when there were those catastrophic failures, they lost their existing bluff top trail. So they replaced it. That trail sits on top of a caisson, a series of caissons. That's an upper bluff retaining wall system. So they replaced that, and then they also replaced the vertical staircase. There was a vertical staircase here going back to early when the apartment complex was first constructed. And fortunately, they were able to design the bottom of the staircase so that it's in the seawall, so that it's more safely situated now. So they currently have pending application to authorize the work that was constructed under the emergency permit. The proposal includes, like I said, the bluff top, lateral access, the vertical access. The project raises all the kind of typical seawall issues, big sand supply impacts here.
I'm sorry, I missed a little gap between what they built and what they want to do.
So there's not much difference.
So the follow-up permit for the emergency authorization.
It's an after fact of approving that.
Well, that was done on emergency.
That was
an
emergency
approval. It is a little out of the ordinary, and they worked up front to address a lot of the issues they knew the commission typically has with these types of projects, and that's why they elected to go with the design. And the access, as Madeline was saying, was already here and required as part of prior permits, so that's put back in as part of their proposal.
So are they proposing building anything else?
No, they'll complete the trail, right. But otherwise it's completed. At this time, that's not entirely correct. So I talked about how they installed a revetment trench under their first emergency permit. They are proposing to retain that, a portion of that, and they would move a portion to the tail of the bluff for additional toast tower protection. So that is currently proposed, and it would be additional development.
I'm sorry, I'm just trying to be clear. As commissioners, are what they're proposing going to change the visual characteristics of what we're looking at?
If the revetment, the buried revetment, and the buried toast tower protection were to become exposed, then it would have a visual impact. Also, the upper bluff will slowly erode, and eventually you would see those caissons, which could then be treated somehow to match.
But I mean, for the next couple of years, they're not building anything.
No, nothing else is proposed to be built. There is some removal of rock proposed, relocation of rock proposed.
The rock that's there now?
The rock that's, Madeline's talking about rock that is now under the sand. You can't see in front of the vertical wall. That rock that you do see, I believe the first little clump is their toe protection on the end of the vertical wall, and then the next clump is actually on the next property. Specifically, villas, which is also required to follow up.